Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Barry's out. Randy McAvoy is in. It's hour number two of the three-hour extravaganza. We call the big show. It's The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5. It's Nick and I. Sorry to disappoint. Not everybody was replaced for this week. Just filling in for Barry is Randy today. Tomorrow, Lance Zierlein. Thursday, Raheel. And Friday, we'll have Jerry. We still haven't confirmed the correct pronunciation of his last name.
Rocha.
Rocha. Jerry Rocha will be with us and also be our comedian of the week. So good to have Randy in today.
Yeah, good to be here.
Easy to say that X-ray wasn't the most popular call of all time. I'll just say that the nice call, and we have a listener named OU Mike. Right. He's a loyal listener to the show. We don't know if he lives in a trailer. We don't know if he wears overalls. We don't know his background, but we know that he is going to be heard from several times. He has one of the most tame responses to X-Ray. He first said, "I bet X-Ray Anthony is very proud of his big brother, Carmelo." And then he finished it with, "I'll bet X-Ray can sell the heck out of used cars, too." So I'm just going to leave it there
as right?
The nicest comments we got between text and Twitter on that topic with that caller. But if you do want to join the show, 713-780-3776, HRNP listen line, call text. You can also hit us up on Twitter. We've posted some pictures and things already. Randy is at KPRC2, Randy McAvoy, at the producer Nick, at Pac-Man Joel with a K. So with that, how much – now I'm curious about this too. The Greenbrier is a pretty foo-foo place for the Texans.
It is.
You guys stay there?
No.
I was going to say, of the media covering the team.
$350 a night there. Not in the budget.
How many of the media folks are staying at the Greenbrier?
I don't think any media folks.
I didn't think so either.
No, we stayed, first off, White Sulphur Springs, great little town.
Yeah.
Just, it's not very big, and the Greenbrier is the only place to stay there. You go to the interstate, next town over is Lewisburg, about literally less than 10 minutes to get there.
Okay.
That's where they have more restaurants. It's probably, I don't know, 30, 40,000 people maybe. Anyway, that's where they have the hotels. Texans had a media block at one of the hotels there. So that's, to my knowledge, most of the media stayed there or nearby. A few of them like rented a house if they're there for a week, save a few bucks.
Really?
And we did that last year.
Okay.
Because we were there for the full 3.5 weeks. I was there first two, and then we traded out crews. But we rented a house in the town next to Lewisburg. So we're about 30 minutes each day, but, you know, you look at the budgets for camp, they kind of threw it on us with no warning that they were going to West Virginia a couple of years ago. You know, it's not cheap.
No.
Not cheap to get there. Then you got to, if you're there in that case for 3.5 weeks, because they stayed the whole time, which I never understood that decision. You alienated all the Texans fans. They heard it.
So did they? Is that why they changed it?
I think so. And plus, it's pretty costly. If you stay the duration, you're talking about $4 or $5 million for the Texans. But now this year they're there, 11 days maybe, something like that. They played their game at KC and came here.
Right.
Last year they played Carolina and went back for another week. But now they're back. Fans are checking out some workouts. That's the way it should be. If you're going to be gone, just I think it needs to be a shorter period, which is what they did. But I'll be surprised if they go back to the Greenbrier. Contract, I believe, is up.
Oh, is it?
I'll see. I'll be curious if they decide to do it another year. It's expensive.
I think it screws the fans.
It does. If you're going to go somewhere off-site for a week to Bond Road, at least do it. Go to San Antonio or something where you can build your fan base and then come watch.
And compete with the Cowboys, who always have owned everything in the state other than the city of Houston.
The Texans, I don't think, have ever done a great job of building their fan base going head-to-head with those guys and build it. They've been around long enough where I think they should be doing it. But if heat is really that big a problem, fine. Every team deals with it. If you're in San Antonio, you know – have be at Trinity again like they used to be the Oilers and then take it inside every now and then to the Alamo Dome.
To the Dome, right?
You know, make it work, you know?
No question about it. And, you know, you look at the entire situation with that and then you look at the team. The other thing that I think is that a lot of you have such a controversy with having this stadium with a roof that they never have open. And right. to me, it's always been – obviously, it's an extra $50 million that they spent to have the retractable roof, and they've had a lot of bad experiences. You go back to the Pittsburgh game, the Kansas City game, when they were really bad, and that left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths. That with the architecture that didn't calculate whose sideline got the sun, and it's the Texans' sideline. But I always said, kind of going back to what you were saying about with the heat, if you prepare for it, if you're in it every day, it's like playing in just December at Lambeau. You come to Houston and say you are an East Coast team. Say you're the Jets. Say you're a team that's right. been playing and it's freezing cold all the time. And all of a sudden,
home field advantage,
humidity, heat, everything. Mm-hmm. I think it's a huge advantage they don't take advantage of.
They don't. It's that they just like it closed. Minute Maid, same way. They keep that thing Minute Maid roof closed all the time. But I go back to back in the 90s when I was covering the Oilers and the Cowboys. We go to Cowboy Camp
yeah.
when Jimmy Johnson's there. They'd be in Austin at St. Edwards 2 days.
Yep.
Didn't matter how
Contact.
Hot it was. Then they go out and win Super Bowls. So it didn't yep. affect them. You gotta grind it out, man. Now these guys have one workout. Last couple of days for the Texans, it's been hour and 15 minutes.
God.
Start at 9:15. I mean, they trickle out, you know, and stretch about 9, but 10:30, 10:40, last 2 days, they've been done.
See, and they the other thing, too, yeah. and this is a big pet peeve of mine, and I've been kicking around with guys here. The biggest thing, too, that really bothers me is the fact that they're limiting the amount of contact. Like you said, they don't do the two-a-days anymore.
Right.
And overall, to me, guys are still getting hurt. After the first week of camp, you had double digits the amount of guys out for the season across the league that were substantial players on teams in this league. When is it going to be where the owners give a little bit too and say, for all you're doing to kind of hinder the team development with less contact, less practices, when are you going to focus on the fact that you're cash cow for preseason games and you look at who plays in these preseason games right. versus who doesn't and the fact that you're also preventing injury by keeping guys out? Go down to two preseason games. I'm not the guy that's in the camp that says you got to play two more regular season games because then again, come playoff time, you're going to have too many guys that aren't available.
So you're saying less preseason games
right
and continue the practices and do what you need to do.
Boost a little bit more of the contact and practice yeah. and some more two-a-days because therefore yeah. you've got more of a well-oiled machine come regular season as opposed to season ticket holders are paying for these games. They have no choice. They're getting to see the third and fourth strings anyway. Take two of those preseason games away so that you prevent injuries, your team is more prepared, and what they're really wanting to see in camp anyway is the battles on the roster between the guys they have in camp.
Right.
So spend more time on the practices because they're more important.
Well, you look at the situation right now, like, you know, personally, Texans haven't said anything about how they're going to use JJ in the preseason. I don't think we'll see JJ
I don't
in
either.
The preseason. I think we will see him September 9th in New England. So you're talking about a guy who's putting in work at practice, but all of a sudden you're putting him in a game situation. That makes me a little nervous when guys hold out completely. I don't know about how you feel about that, but you know I want to see him tested
yeah.
probably a little more in practice to make sure there's no issues, no setbacks. I don't think we're going to see a lot of Deshaun Watson.
It shocked me you saw him at all in the first preseason
Did
game.
You? See, I wasn't surprised. What,
okay.
not what he played one series was
right.
not what I figured. O'Brien had said most likely he was going to play, so we all said, okay, a series. Sure enough, it was one series. I just don't think we're going to see a lot. Like he might play a little more. You know, what are we right now, Tuesday? So yeah. O'Brien could announce something later in the week, but like right now I'm predicting very little on Saturday. I don't think we're going to see a lot of him. I think they just want to make sure their guy
yeah.
is good to go.
And I think from a JJ perspective, I get it. Because he's had the history of these injuries the last couple of seasons. He's getting, you know, everybody looks at, again, because the first thing they look at is the dollar figure and what you're getting back on your returns. But the bottom line is he's had some pretty major injuries, right?
He's only played, what, eight games
in
two
the last
years?
Two or three years.
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, total.
So I get where they're coming from as well on that. It's all about being ready for the opener. You don't want to take any chances. But how do you balance that with getting work in? Like, Deshaun still only has seven games under his belt.
Right.
As good as he was, the flashes that he showed, you know, I would like to see Saturday night. I know D-Hop didn't play in the opener. Hopefully Hop's on the field, which I think he will be a little bit.
Uh-huh.
I like to see them just a couple of series, get the timing. I just want to see what it looks like. Yeah. You know?
That's the other thing.
Then you got the Rams after that. That's probably your last test anyway.
And again, if you want the game that they supposedly play the hardest and play the starters the most in game three, you don't really want it against the Rams defense.
No.
You know, they've added Akeem Tlaib. They have all these great defensive players, whether Aaron Donald plays or not. That's probably not the game that you want to go.
Wade Phillips over there, too, right?
Yeah, and you know, Wade might have a little bit of an extra motivation, right? But you're right. Yeah. That's not the one that I'd rather see. I'd rather see them play the Jets.
And it could be that approach. I mean, game three isn't what it used to be for a lot of teams. It used to be where the starters go into the second half. I don't think we see that much anymore.
I would be very, very happy if they didn't say a whole lot of Deshaun or JJ for that matter, but for Deshaun and the offense to not have to go up against the Rams defense in the one preseason game that they put him on the field. All right, Randy's here. Nick and I are here. We're going to continue to roll on. We appreciate you and want you to be a part of the show. Something on your mind you want to get off your chest? 713-780-3776. That's the HRNP listener line where you can call, you can text. You can also reach us via Twitter. We'll be back with more. It's the Usual Suspects, ESPN 975.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back on The Usual Suspects, knee-deep in hour number two, three-hour show. Randy McAvoy is in for Barry Laminack. It's me, it's Nick. It's everything you ever wished for or wanted for in a sports show in your afternoon. Thanks for being a part of it. We appreciate you being suspects. Because we appreciate you, we like to give back. Therefore, we want to tell you about the Houston Dash versus the Washington Spirit. It's August the 17th. It's later this week. It's a friendship between Bud Light and soccer that goes back over 30 years. You've heard Glenn Davis talk about it. Ever since the first Bud Light rolled out of the Houston Brewery, join us at BBVA Compass Stadium this Friday night as the Dash take the pitch against the Washington Spirit. Call in now. You could win tickets for you and not one, not two, not five. You and 10 of your closest friends. Nick, could you even scrounge up 10 friends?
Maybe. I might be able to.
I mean, I don't want to challenge people that you like that, but okay. So you, how about this deal? You and 10 of your closest friends, and when you're all there, you can stop by the Bud Light bunker for a cold Bud Light and the best view of the match. Bud Light, brewed deep in the heart of Texas. We're going to take caller number 20, 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. Caller number 20, you and 10 friends are going to go see the Dash and the Spirit this Friday. That ain't bad.
That's a good deal right there.
10 friends. No, I don't want to see these on eBay either, by the way. I see saw JJ's girlfriend, right?
Kalia Ojai, right?
Close enough. Yeah. I'll go with what you said.
She had a hell of a goal the other day.
She's on the U.S. Olympic team.
Yeah, Sunday. I mean, I don't know all the soccer. I'm not a huge soccer fan, but, man, she had a great move to the goal and fed it in for an assist for a goal. JJ weighed in. It was
Is that right?
On Twitter. It was amazing.
Yeah, that's kind of neat that they're both in the same city, too.
No doubt.
Yeah, so very cool there, and good to see the Dash. I think sometimes they're forgotten about, but it's really, if you love competitive soccer, especially if you have daughters like you and I do,
yeah.
I mean, if you have daughters that love soccer, it's an up-close and personal feel with some really talented players.
I think this is their best year since they've been here.
Yeah, because they've struggled.
Most competitive, you know, those first few years were a struggle, but yep. I think they've got some talent now.
Definitely. Okay, so we were talking about the Texans before the break, and one thing I wanted to get to before we get to any of the calls or the other things, I wanted to ask your opinion on dealing with a guy like Bill O'Brien. Barry and I have talked mm-hmm. about it over and over again. It's weird because of the fact that you and I know how it is in this town and with sports teams. And it's crazy to me that in a lot of cases, the team expects so much of you in the media to kind of do them a solid, do them favors along the way. But yet when you go to them, and you, especially even in a press conference setting where your only goal is to get that B-roll and that soundbite, mm-hmm. that he likes to take the Belichick approach a lot.
Yes, he does.
And that's got to be frustrating.
It is.
From a person doing, especially from a TV aspect, where you need that sound.
He is exactly taking it from his days in New England. There's no doubt. He's done it since day one here. When he's in a bad mood, it's even worse. Yesterday at practice, I think his post-practice availability maybe lasted, seemed like 2 minutes, 3 minutes, something like that. It was short. It was a horrible practice, so he came off the field in a bad mood. He was not happy with what he saw because they were off the day before. So, but in season two, man, after tough losses. But you know what? He also is fair when asked the tough questions sometimes too. He's not going to give away injury information.
Right.
He's not going to do that. Most coaches won't. But I think he respects the tough questions, to be honest with you. I think Belichick is on a different level when it comes to the way he deals with the media.
And don't you think winning has something to do with that too?
Where absolutely. But Bill will answer the tough questions. And I see two sides of him. During the course of the year, not only does he I'm there for most of his
well, you guys do the show, I was going to say, so well, that helps you have a relationship
right,
with
him. Right, it's a little bit different. I see two sides of Bill, and we tape the show midweek, and sometimes later in the week kind of depends what his schedule is. So, you know, we're in a separate room. It's just the two of us. You know, you're not really off camera. You're not just talking football
right.
in and around our tapings. So I've seen a diff, kind of a more personal side of Bill than some of the others that are there on a daily basis. But, you know, it depends on the day, but he does respect good, well-thought-out questions. And I think he likes that. He's a smart guy.
So are you more apt to ask a tough question? Because you know he
depends what situation is. I'm not afraid to. I mean, you talk about like because I do the show.
At the press conferences. Yeah, I'm just saying because of the fact that some guys shy away from it. Other guys are like, well, look, I don't want that to affect my relationship because I do have to do the show.
Yeah.
And then there's guys like John McClain that are going to be, you know, just from my guys, why did you guys really, why were you terrible in the first four quarters of the game? Granted, you gave 2 minutes in the overtime.
Yeah, no, the beat writer guys have a lot more to write about. They've got to really dig a little bit deeper. And I think we do our fair share on the TV side as well. But, you know, I'm there. Wex is there. Laney's there. You know, when you're coming off a game, when the question's there and the topic is there, you've got to ask it. He's not going to shoot you down for asking it. And I respect that. But then on the other side, when I do the show, it's just a different environment. You know what I'm saying? And I've enjoyed getting to know him. There's a lot on the Bill O'Brien, a lot of people don't know about, and away from football. And
I thought Hard Knocks did a good job of humanizing him a lot with, like you said, his family, his son,
right?
Those kind of situations. I do like the fact, like with the post Oak Little League, where he singled them out,
gave
some love.
I guess his son played on maybe a
competitive team against them or something
this summer.
Yeah,
during the All Star run, and he said, "Man, these guys are good."
Yeah,
so gave him a good shout out. So. You know, he's a big baseball fan. Big baseball fan. And when he can get out to Minute Maid Park, you'll see him. I haven't really seen him at Tortoise Center, but you see some of the other guys.
A couple times with Rusty Harden. He was sitting courtside a couple times. Yeah, he and even Rick Smith was there for a while. So that's interesting. All right, Eric wants to get in here. He's got some questions on some stuff we've covered already. So, Eric, what's up?
Hey, guys. I just have a quick question. I know the Maryland thing was a tragedy, but I just want to get your take. I was watching America's game, and Jimmy Johnson, he said he couldn't win with a team makes a coward out of you. Do you think the tone in the NFL or football in general has changed for the better or for the worse? I'll hang up and listen.
Wait, Eric, what was the tragedy?
The Maryland
situation. Yeah. Okay. All right. Appreciate the call. I will say this. You know, back in those days, there wasn't as much concentration on the expertise of the training staff. The sports performance, as they like to call it now. They don't even like to have a strength coach. It's all about sports performance.
They've renamed it and everything.
Right. Yeah. And I think that to the old school football players, that's their first reference was, we didn't have sports performance. We didn't have analytics. But we had two-a-days, and we had full contact all the time. And we still came out okay. McHale was big on that from an NBA perspective. Don't worry about four games in 5 nights. We flew commercial. We did all these
totally
things
different
and
challenges.
Didn't miss a game.
Right.
So
I think the old school guys see the this day and age of players as, man, they're soft.
Yeah, for sure. In a lot of ways, they do.
They did nothing what we did, let alone we didn't make the money they made either.
Right, but you look at the backlash LeBron got when he said, we're tired, we need more rest. You know, a lot of the old school guys, Barkley and McHale and those guys were like, what are you talking about? From a football perspective, obviously it's different because of the amount of physicality. Because obviously when you look at the three major sports, they get paid the least of guaranteed money and probably deserve it the most based on how physical and how debilitating the sport can be when they're done playing. But overall, excuse me, when you look at it, I just think we've softened as a society because we spend so much time in trying to I get bettering performance, but I think at overall too, there has to be something said about at some point you are still toughening them up a little bit too.
Well, I think today's let's just say football, you know, with the way these players now, you look on a football field, the way they're built, the way they work out, they're bigger, faster, stronger,
right,
than they used to be. Therefore, the violence level of the sport, the physicality of the sports increased a lot. So, you know, obviously the concussions is the big issue. I get that. But they are protecting
long term.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. But they are protecting these players a lot more than they used to. And that's what I think when you hear some of these old timers say they're not tough enough anymore, part of that's on the league. They're trying to protect these guys a little bit more as well.
Yeah. I mean, look, you look at it, and obviously the rules right now, they still haven't gotten a firm grasp on that. Yeah. They are trying to clean it up a little bit. But I think that without going to the point of worrying about contact on guys running over the middle, linemen in the trenches can still see them getting their work in against their own defensive linemen competing for positions, just to see certain key moves, certain ways that they handle themselves. You don't have to necessarily scrimmage full out to where you got receivers running slants and quick hits where they're getting crushed.
Right.
But at the same time, I think that it's a fine line. The Maryland situation, I think, is more of a rarity than it is something. They're very careful with most players in most programs. But we were talking about it yesterday. If you read some of the inside background on ESPN's column on what happened at Maryland, it's ugly.
With the kid that went down.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if he doesn't go down
degree,
and he passed away.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if any of this comes to light as a problem, because now it looks like this was a massive issue.
Right. And they ruled the cause of death, I believe, was heat stroke, right?
Yep. Yep. 106 degrees when they took him off the field. Didn't die immediately. Died after a stay, actually, at the hospital. But the coaching staff, and I've always said this too, there's different ways of coaching. Certain guys you have to push, some guys you have to coddle, and some guys you kind of go in between. But based on this article that I read and the fact that the things they were saying, things they were doing, it was more like torture-type things than it was football.
All right.
So that's something that you got to be aware of. But Eric, appreciate the call. We'll continue to roll on. We're at the midway point in the show. 90 in the books, 90 still to go in the big show. That means we'll be back with the second half. Don't go anywhere. It's the Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
Who's this?
Hey, this is Trey Wingo. You're listening to ESPN 97.5 Houston. Hello.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Damon and I just got back from Baltimore. We went there this morning to meet with the parents of Jordan McNair. And I wanted to meet with them in private to express on behalf of the university our apology for their loss of their son. I said to them, and I said I will be mentioning it publicly this afternoon, but I wanted them to hear it directly from me this morning. The university accepts legal and moral responsibility for the mistakes that our training staff made on that fateful workout day of May the 29th, which of course led subsequently to his death on June 13th.
So that was just recently released press conference, president of the University of Maryland, Wallace D. Lowe. That is a red flag. That lets you know that they know that
it's on them.
It's on them.
Yeah.
Which also does not sit well with all the trainers and the coaches that were put on administrative leave. That means you are leaving, and you are going to probably face some ramifications as well.
That's
because
a mess,
that's a bad
man.
Look.
Oh, what a mess.
Yeah, and you know, and it's a shame because you look at the landscape of college football right now. You've got the Maryland situation going on. You got the Ohio State situation that every day takes another turn, but it's all for the negative. And it's a shame because obviously the popularity of not just football down here and down south, but across the country, college football, pro football, and just the fact that college football has been exciting. They finally started to really get, you know, the bowl system taken care of with the way that they can compete for a true national championship and everything like that. And it's just a bad look. It's a really bad look for college football right now.
Well, Durkin's on administrative leave.
Right.
You got the offensive coordinator, I think, who's taken over on an interim basis. And you and I were talking during the break, and I just realized this yesterday that season opener, Texas at Maryland, September 1st. And that game was already going to, or their opener was already going to get a lot of attention, Maryland's. And then I saw the Longhorns are going to be going their return game from last year when Maryland came to Austin and won. But inside that program, recruits are bailing. I mean, it's a free fall right now.
Yeah,
and you got to feel really, you know, for the obviously the family, the loss
no question
of the son
about it, because
and how that went down.
It's really unfortunate that a family loses their son. And you look at it and you say, and if he doesn't die, is any of this coming to light?
Probably not.
No. And you look at it, and like I said, I encourage you all to look at the article that was posted on ESPN yesterday about the backstory that's going on here. From the strength coach to the head coach, it's a bad look. Because these guys, I mean, from the stories of taking a guy that's trying to lose weight, and if he didn't finish all the sprints, they forced him to eat candy bars and sit in front of his entire team eating the candy bars so that he could be just absolutely embarrassed in front of his teammates, to a guy that they wanted to put weight on as an offensive lineman. If he couldn't do it, the coach sat with him at the training table and forced him to eat till he threw up.
Just torture.
Ridiculous. Yeah. It literally is. That's why I said in the last segment, it's more like torture than it is motivating a player to try and get him to a different level of performance. And Will Muschamp came out yesterday in support.
I saw that.
I was just going to say.
Like, we played the audio, and I'm going, how can you possibly, after the facts, and not all of them are out, but as they keep coming out, they're all negative, how can you go to bat for this guy?
They must be buddies, you know, protecting the buddy.
But we all know that there's a huge difference between how you are with your family.
Yeah.
And how you do your job and what you have to do at your job, but you don't have to be like that.
Yeah, it's Muschamp's comments, I think, got a lot of attention yesterday.
Yeah,
I don't know, man. It's that school in this program now, obviously under the microscope, and for the president to come out today and basically say we are 100% responsible, because there's lawsuits going, there's going to be all kinds of stuff going on.
No doubt. Now you know that's an open door where the family is, and rightfully so, the family is going to go in and they're going to sue. And if you've got the president already admitting guilt, that's obviously to where you basically, they can probably name their price, but that doesn't solve the issue. The issue is trying to get this program back to a respectability from a moral standpoint of how you carry yourself on a daily basis.
I think it begs the question, too, is, you know, to what extreme will programs and coaching staffs, training staffs do on a national basis? You're at Maryland,
Big Ten school.
Big Ten program, you know, trying to compete with the big boys. You know, how far will you go to try to build your program and get victories? Obviously, we saw the approach Maryland has done, and it's backfired. Who knows if it's going on elsewhere in the country? It might be. It just hasn't come to light yet. But the pressure of winning in college sports, specifically college football, is way off the charts, and coaches go different paths to get there.
And you look at it, and it's not just football, because I've harped on this forever. The dirtiest, most disgusting sport within the sport is AAU basketball. But it's all about winning, and it's the same thing, and it's all about the competition of getting the player. And I take it back, and I revert back to this Ohio State story. Whether Tom Herman blew the whistle on Urban Meyer or not, if it is true in any way, shape, or form that he decided to do some of this because he was bitter about losing a five-star recruit receiver to Ohio State, it's gone way too far.
Right.
Like you said,
I agree.
The emphasis on winning has gone to new levels of just disgusting conduct by coaches, by AAU coaches, by even high school coaches. Now recruiting games get all the way to the high school level where they're recruiting to get kids so they can win games. winning at all costs should not be at the level of high school, let alone when these kids, your parents, and you know what it's like. You just said your daughter's getting ready to go back to Baylor. You know what it's like when you turn your child over to a university and in an athletic program to the coaching staff, trusting that they have the kid's best interest at heart, and then these kind of things happen.
Yeah. You know, the whole Herman story, you know, he's been out denying it. I guess he did come out and say, yes, a year ago, my wife
and
did
I
help
gave money
some financial assistance one time.
Yep. And it wasn't for legal purposes,
right,
he said.
Right. It was, they were needing it, and they stepped forward, but he said it was a one time thing. But, you know, he shot it down. The reporter that had the story.
Snook was one,
McMurphy was the first bombshell.
Yeah, McMurphy.
Snook was the second.
And then McMurphy said, you know, he was not my source.
Right.
So, what a mess. I mean, what a mess right now for Maryland, and it brings to light issues in college sports and college football.
Yeah, it's definitely a business, and it's unfortunately more than a cutthroat business. It's dirty right now, so there's things to keep an eye on there. All right, Randy McAvoy is in for Barry. It's Nick, it's Joel. We're going to continue to roll on. We still got plenty more to get to in the show and some things that I want to bounce off of Randy as well, so don't go anywhere. And, of course, if you want to join the show, 713-780-3776, HRNP listener line, call, text, or hit us on Twitter. Right now, I do want to tell you about my good friends at Gallery Furniture. You know how Mac's been doing it in the Houston area, whether it's helping victims of the hurricane to just making a difference in the Houston community. He's a Houstonian, and he wants to make sure he takes care of the people of this city. He does so in many ways, but also with his furniture stores, because he wants you to think Gallery Furniture every time you need anything in furniture for your house. Therefore, he's made it more convenient for you. Three locations now across the Houston area. It's Grand Parkway between Katy and Sugarland. It's the Galleria across from Dillard's, and of course, I-45 North exit Tidwell Parker both ways. Regardless of which one of the three locations you choose, the deals are always going to be the same. The customer service is going to be second to none, and the quality furniture is going to be there for your liking. It's a solid wood American made furniture business. That means no matter what you buy, it's furniture, it's going to last a long time. But with brands like Stickley, you're talking about leather and upholstered furniture for every room in your house, and it's going to last. And everything that Max says in his commercials is exactly what they're going to do. That means if you buy today, you get it tonight within 3 to 4 hours. Delivery door will be there at your house. The delivery guys, they'll also take away furniture you don't want, rearrange furniture you need in other rooms, because they want to make a very lasting impression on you with customer service. And that also means that what Max says is what they're going to do when it comes to your purchase. That means from the finance department that's going to make sure that your payment plans are exactly what you need, to the fact that if you buy today, you get it tonight, and there's no back order slips. That means if you buy it, you see it, you're going to get it that same day. No waiting 2, 3, 4 weeks to get the furniture that you paid your hard-earned money for to get the furniture right away. It's going to be presented at your door that same evening. And also, the main thing that Max says is exactly what they're going to do. Gallery really will save you money.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Knee deep in hour number two of the three-hour show we call The Usual Suspects. Barry's out doing some comedy in L.A. That means that Randy McAvoy has graciously blessed us with his presence and filling in a day. Tomorrow, Lance Zierlein will join us for the entire show. Raheel will join us on Thursday. And Jerry Rocha will be here as our comedian of the week and filling in on Friday. So a fun week while Barry's out, but we look forward to him coming back on a Monday. We do have some stuff to get to before we hit the top of the hour, but some things I wanted to ask you about, Randy. I don't know if you saw the story with Jalen Ramsey and what went down in Jacksonville.
Bits and pieces of it, yeah.
But it's
so he got suspended, right?
Yeah, and it would be good to get your perspective too, because we talked about this, and I mentioned from a Rockets perspective, and Raheel talked about from a Texans perspective. But it's kind of the overall. What do you expect as a fan from the media, because of the fact that if you're only allowed in for a certain portion of practice, and we said for Rockets practices, you know, they don't allow the media in until they're just shooting around.
Very limited.
Right?
Texans practice, you're allowed to be there, just cameras rolling, certain note-taking restrictions. That's the stuff that's in place over there.
And they're watching even the note-taking and the things like that.
Yeah, you're limited on what you can do. Now, it'll change a little bit from training camp to regular season, but things really ramp up once the regular season hits. You're allowed, and they don't allow just everybody out there. You've got to be a regular media member that they
consistent attendance.
That they know, you know, it can't be random blogger guy showing up, you know, they're not going to have you're not going to get access. But you're allowed to watch practice, and then after practice, you can report stuff you've seen. You just can't do strategies. You can't do any of that. You are limited, though.
So, but where are you on the fact that as the situation happened, the beat writer covering the team for a website, I believe it was, or something, Jags.com or something like that.
Oh, that's the website version of the newspaper. I forget the name of the newspaper, okay. But it's Jags.com.
So
it's
the website. For okay. Jags.com, but he's in on that media availability.
Right.
He's using his phone to get some video. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, a
Which
fight
everybody
breaks
does
out.
Now.
I was going to say, and everybody uses their phone, even in the news department, and I talk about it with Lisa all the time, that everyone's a reporter now because they all have their cell phones.
Absolutely. It's your camera, man.
So you're that guy. You're shooting practice for KPRC, and you get that video, and they're fighting. You're running with that, right?
It's the practice. It's the fight and practice, right?
And you're in media.
If you're in a video avail window, video window that is open, it's open, man. They shut it down. Like in West Virginia and here, there's portions of camp practice you can't show.
Right.
They say, turn the cameras off. So you can't – if it happened during that period, no, you can't
obviously,
do it.
Right.
But if it's in an open period, we have every right to run it. Now, the team will probably not – I'd say the team. Could be any Jags or whoever it might be, Texans or whatever team it is. They're probably not going to want that out there, but that a rule's a rule. If you're in an open period – cameras are going, phones are up and going, and you're shooting. To me, it's free game.
And that's the thing.
Especially if fans are in the stands.
That
you know they're shooting.
Because they witnessed it, right?
Yeah.
You're right, and they're shooting it. And that's a great point. But the other thing is that kind of what I was getting to is the fact that there's an expectation amongst the fans. They're always critical of the media. There's people out there, there's bloggers out there that want to be critical of the media, and they don't like the media. And I think a lot of this kind of rolls over from politics as well. But the thing is you have a job to do, and your job is to report what's going on with the teams. Otherwise, the fans would be left out in the dark in a lot of ways for getting information on their team on a daily basis.
The fans rely on the media to paint the picture for them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So my thing is that you get all these bloggers, these people that are glorified people that think that they're in the media, but they're really not. But they've self-appointed themselves to be experts on the team, on broadcasting, on things like that. And they expect you to handle things a certain way. On the flip side, you have the team, and I know this firsthand as well, and you know it. The fact that there's the team, like you mentioned, it's not just in football either. The teams are going to come to you and go, we don't want you to run that.
Oh,
sometimes you're going to uncover something that they don't want you to uncover. And they're going to go, hey, don't run that. That's not news. Or don't run that, and I'll give you a one-on-one with someone later in the year.
Try to talk you out of it.
Yeah,
a little bargaining.
Negotiate.
A little bargaining, negotiation. You got to, man, if you've got something, to me, you can't sit on a story if it happens right. Again, we'll just use football for example.
Sure.
If you're following the rules, you're getting video, maybe you're doing interviews and something's said or whatever, it's there. I mean,
it's fair game, right?
It's fair game. And you got to do what's best. You can't be bargained with by an employee of the team or whatever it might be. And I will say here in town, I'll speak for myself.
Yeah.
I don't get that kind of stuff from the team personnel. It's like if it happens.
Oh, it happens.
It happens.
It happens.
And there's nobody coming over to plead with you or anything like that. I've never witnessed that. It may have happened in this market for all I know over the years. I've never had to deal with that.
And that's a good thing, but I think part of that is I think that you have the reputation in this town of someone that's not going to do those kind of things because of the integrity of what you're trying to do.
Right.
But I think that on the flip side, and I can tell you from firsthand experience, there are people that it's very disappointing when you find out, but there are people in this market that you can – I don't want to say bought off, but you can be negotiated with. Like, you don't run that, and I'll give you a one-on-one with our best player right before this or that or sweeps or whatever you want.
Work with me here kind of deal, yeah.
To bury a story. And I think that's where you get away from the integrity of journalism the way it was meant to be done. Because you look at all these situations with Maryland, with Ohio State. Look at what we're talking about with Snook and McMurphy. It's a back and forth about integrity of what they're supposed to do, too, because it's not just one source when you know that that source is probably a little less than credible.
Right.
But if you have multiple sources and people are telling you the same thing, your job is to report that story. And there's going to be a portion of your fan base or a portion of your viewership, in your case, that's not going to be happy with that. And they're going to try and blame you because you're just doing your job.
You're just doing the job and you've got the facts. You got to go with it. You've got to report it. If you've got the story, you've been working on it, you've done your homework, You got to get it done. The viewers, in our case, listeners in radio and readers on the print side, expect nothing less.
That's the thing. But expectations go through the roof when you bring in social media. When you give it, when you give everybody a forum where everybody with a keyboard now.
Well, if you don't do the story, somebody else.
That's the other thing too, right?
This is a competitive business. I mean, if you've got the story, I mean, sometimes people have it to themselves. For the most part, in this market, most people kind of know what's going on for the most part.
And not so much here, but you know on the national front too.
Not so much exclusive stuff in Houston. So.
The bigger thing than just the story itself is you have to now credit who broke it first.
Right.
Like ESPN got in a lot of trouble for a while for that because they were giving information and it was like, wait. So-and-so at the NFL Network had
actually
that first.
Actually had that first,
yeah. Or yeah, Ian Rappaport had that first or something like that. Yeah. That's a big deal as well. And everybody is after.
It's also, in my opinion, how do you define that? If everybody's kind of got the same story and it's within minutes, I don't know how big a deal is. So-and-so had it first if it comes down to the next period of time.
I think once you're the first, that's fine. But after that, it's all fair game because everybody – we know that the 24-hour news cycle is 24 seconds at this point. After that 24-second shot clock goes off, it's pretty much fair game, right?
Yeah, and then you try to – if you don't have it, you try to confirm it. And by then, it's on every social media platform out there.
And the other thing that always –
that's how the business has changed.
And that's the other thing where it's changed because at least when you've gotten a background in journalism and broadcasting and you've had experience, like I can honestly say both of us have had, you also realize there's going to be times when you're wrong.
Right.
And when you're wrong, you have to own up to it just like when you're right and you've broken a story. And that's where I think a lot of these bloggers and these people that think that they're so-called experts fall way short. The fact of the matter is you can run with something and you can be very opinionated in it and you can get that out there on social media. But when you find out you were wrong, attack it with the same vigor and venom that you did when you thought that you were right. Because I always go back to the Calvin Murphy story and I say, look, when Murph was indicted and I was right there by his side, he lost his job with the Rockets. He lost a lot of respect from a ton of people in the market. And at the end of the day, he was front page news. Fast forward a very, very, very difficult stretch of time for him and his family to find out he was exonerated. It was on the back page of the sports section in a paragraph the size of my thumbprint. And no one gave it the same attention.
Stepped forward,
and
yeah,
I think that's just kind of a microcosm of what we're talking about here. Everybody wants to be a blogger. Everybody wants to be a story breaker. But at the same time, they don't want to be accountable when
they're wrong.
You're wrong.
Yeah.
Because, like, you were all over the Jimbo Fisher story.
Well, it's funny. I was just about to bring that up. You know, that was a big story that developed, and I worked a couple sources, and still of that magnitude, I wanted to make sure. I mean, I hesitated. I could have put it out there on social media a little bit sooner than I did, but, man, I had to make sure it was correct. And It developed fast. You know, Florida State people were not happy with me. I got ripped to shreds on it, but I stuck with the sources that I trusted that knew the inside story, and it all played out, and then they ended up getting more money anyway.
Yeah.
You know, you got to watch your wording on it because when I broke it at the time it was going to be, you know, minimum of a 5-year deal, minimum.
Right.
And still to be determined. They're still working on stuff. Turned out to be much more than that. But no, you got to be careful.
Yeah, definitely. And that's why I said we always talk about the cowardly keyboard confidants who get on social media. The fact of the matter is you don't just check your T's and your I's.
Right.
You got to make sure and think about it several times before you press send because you were on the
minute
hook.
You
once
push
it hits
in,
the,
man. Yep. You push send, you're on the block there.
No doubt about it.
Yeah.
All right, we got two in the books. 1 hour still to go, 60 minutes on the clock, and the Sports Mappers are going to join us on 94.1 next. That's going to be great. Simulcasting through 7 o'clock where the Blitz will take you home after us. So don't go anywhere. It's 1 hour left. It's the usual suspect. It's ESPN 97.5. If you catch me at the border, I got visas in my name. If you come around here, I'll make them all
day. I get one down in a second if you wait. My name is Bob Lee, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.